Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday, at 11 o'clock, where we discuss different aspects of life, Chinuch education, medicine, health, anything that will help us learn about new knowledge and things that we don't know yet, or anything we can improve in to up our skill, to be the people we want to be able to live in the world we want to live in. Anything that will help us influence our families, our friends, ourselves, and just figure out more about the world and what we can do to improve everything around us. Today, we're going to have a very important discussion, which is actually one I don't think we have spoken about it yet in the show, which is quite rare to have a topic like that, considering that the show's been going on for about a decade. So it's time. And I think specifically today, you know, the very big night that is coming up this week, nights, the Seder nights that we're all preparing for, is based a lot about telling your children, communicating with them, teaching them, showing them the history, where we come from and who we are today and the whole journey we've gone through. And we normally do that by talking and sharing information and by kids listening and being able to hear and comprehend what we say. Yes, it is very special at the Seder that we use visuals as well, and we use other techniques, and we pretty much use all our senses when it comes to the Seder. Yet, still talking is a very important one. And what we're going to discuss today is when a child is born and doesn't really hear, or when maybe we go older in life and we start losing our hearing, or any challenges that come with loss of hearing and the connection as well to speech, language, etc. And in studio, I have with me two guests. We'll start with Charlene Brett, who is an audiologist. Good morning, Charlene. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know you, a bit about you and your work.
I'm an audiologist. When I qualified, we qualified dual as speech therapist and hearing and audiologists. But over the years, the course has become so large that it was split into speech therapy and audiology. So about 16 years ago, I upgraded my audio skills and did a degree in hearing sciences at Tuckey's University. My first grade was at WITS. And I've also got a background in speech and drama. So the three fields have come together in the work that I do.
Wow.
I have mainly come to work with adults, but I do work with children as well.
Okay, so we'll get to discuss from different angles today to understand how we work with that and around that. Our next guest today on the show is Dr. Zelda Isaacson. She is with a PhD in speech and language and focuses on deaf education. Or why do we call it deaf education? Shouldn't it be like education for deaf people or something like that?
They all apply, yeah.
Okay, so let's introduce you, maybe share a bit about you, your work, for the listeners who don't know you.
Yes, so I always taught deaf children for decades and decades, because I'm quite old now, and so that's what I've always done. And in my retiring years, I came to realize that a lot of the things I did have always just stayed on the shelf of my bookcase. So I've got a big doctorate and I've got a fancy embossed master's, but in the end I realized they didn't actually reach anybody, they just are my knowledge. So I very much wanted to take my knowledge out and give it to the deaf children. So I started writing a book about literacy for deaf children, because believe it or not, this is the only book in the whole world that has a program for literacy. For
wow.
Deaf children, there is no program. There is no program. And all the research will just say, regrettably, there is no program. There is no comprehensive program.
Why? Why is the world in that space that there's actually, we've developed so much in so many areas, and then there's no literacy program or book written on it for deaf children?
Okay, just before I start, there are two groups of deaf children. The one is, you can say, the fortunate group. that as soon as they're born, they are diagnosed as deaf, and then they are given auditory rehabilitation, either hearing aids or cochlear implants, and then they have neuroplasticity and they can learn to hear. But it's a short time, and the fortunate children either have cochlear implants, or if they don't need it, they have very good hearing aids, and they learn to hear, they go to school, they learn to read, they learn to talk. So I'm not talking about that segment. Okay. I'm talking about the other segment who they might have been diagnosed late or live where there is no auditory center, like the auditory approach. Those are the children, and another obstacle is bias, because there is a certain group of people, they're called bilingual bicultural education, where they view deaf children as a separate group. They don't have to learn to talk, they don't have to learn to hear, they have a wide culture of their own. So with them, they don't get this early start, the window of opportunity closes, and they can't read.
Okay. So before we continue into the show, I think we have to touch on that. Mm. And I'm going to ask you, as an audiologist, Janine, how do we identify a baby that's born? How do we identify that they're deaf? How do we approach at a younger age? What are the signs we're looking for, etc.?
Okay. So in the privileged medical sector, newborns... newborns in private hospitals can get a newborn hearing screening on the day that they're born.
Okay.
It is increasing in the public sector, and the more advocacy there is for early detection, the wider that becomes. So we have to understand that there are different types of hearing loss. There's temporary hearing loss due to an infection.
But that's at a later point. Probably. I'm talking about just the identification in the beginning, because Dr. Zelda spoke about a window of an opportunity to actually correct it. By the way, what are we talking about? What is the time period that we have to actually correct or implement or hearing aids that will help a baby that was born without
hearing? Well, a child who is deaf should ideally be identified by age 3 months. Okay. And intervention should start ideally at 6 months.
Okay. So if a mom has a baby that was not diagnosed in the hospital with it, she didn't pick it up for whatever reason, okay, what is she looking for while taking care of her baby that will alert her to say, hey, I should get this checked out?
So if a child normally starts to babble, and if the babbling stops at about 8 months, that is a warning sign. Because they're not hearing themselves speaking. That's a red flag.
Which is already too late for that window of opportunity. Because you said up to 6 months, you should start intervention.
That's ideal.
Oh, okay.
We don't live in an ideal world.
No, definitely not. Okay.
One should be alert to the fact that they only notice you if they see you. They wouldn't be able to look to see if they hear the footsteps coming into the room. Those are the primary symptoms.
Okay, so that's the children that we're looking for and trying to identify. Is there anything else that you would be looking for in a toddler for signs of hearing challenges?
No, all those signs.
Those are the signs.
I mean, I remember one parent telling me she only realized that her daughter was deaf when her daughter was playing in the driveway, and they hooted, and the child didn't respond. So,
so
just
quite
what Charlene says.
Mm. Okay.
The other important thing, a red flag, is if a child starts to speak and then they stop speaking, that could also be a very important.
How would
red
they
flag.
Start speaking? Isn't it like an aspect of imitation?
There is an aspect of imitation, but built into our psyche by the creator of the world is the ability and the desire for a child to learn to speak. Many people say it's a black box. We actually don't know what enables a child to learn language. Yes, they need hearing. They need good cognition. They need stimulation. They need to be in an environment which promotes that. But the actual mechanism of why a child, for example, is going to learn past tense, and they extract the principles from language, like they learn I walked, but they know I take, but they'll start saying I taked instead of I took.
Okay.
So those are. That is something that we just don't understand.
Yet, how can that happen without hearing, considering that every child who starts speaking in the language of their parents, right? A baby in Italy speaks Italian, and a baby in South Africa speaks one of our 11 languages, and a baby in Israel will speak Hebrew. Then there must be that the hearing has
Absolutely.
To be the fundamental. So
but
how?
But when they babble in the sounds of all the languages. And then if they're hearing, they will somehow screen out that those are the sounds of the language. So they need to learn to hear.
So that's why the sign works. So the babbling starts, but the hearing doesn't. So basically the babbling starts, but the language actually doesn't. And that's why they regress. Because that you can't talk the words of the language if you haven't heard them.
Yeah.
My unprofessional assumption. Okay, we do need to continue right after the break. We'll take a short break to hear what our advertisements are and what we can hear about and learn and get and achieve. So, a short break. I'm here, if you're just joining now, I'm here with Dr. Zeld Isaacson, who is a speech and language therapist, and I'm here with Charlene Bretz, who is an audiologist, and we're speaking about hearing and development as a child. We'll continue right after the break.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we just had a short break, and we are in a very important discussion about hearing, development of hearing children. I'm here with Charlene Bretz, who's an audiologist, and Dr. Zelda Isaacson, who is a speech and language therapist. We started right before the break, Charlene, you mentioned about the death babbling. Like, there is an aspect of babbling, even if the child does not hear the language around, and they could start providing some kind of form of communication. Zelda, I'll go to you. What is what does it sound like? Or how do we identify a babbling that is not?
Okay, so when children are born, they all babble. It's instinctual babbling. As a matter of fact, there's a really amazing thing, a TED Talk by a Professor Kuhl. And it's called the linguistic genius of babies. So up to, as Charlene says, about 8 months, all children sound the same. Chinese children, black children in Zulu, Czechoslovakian children, it doesn't matter. They all sound the same. And she terms these universal citizens because they've got a universal voice. But from the age of about 8 months, for hearing children, a very interesting thing evolves. They learn to ignore sounds that they do not have in their own language. In the first months, they have all the sounds, but they learn to ignore them. I don't know if you've ever heard, like, a Chinese person can't say "aru."
Okay.
He doesn't hear "ru" anymore. Okay. He stopped hearing it when he was 8 months old.
So the reason we have accents, what you're saying is because our brain has learned how to delete certain sounds that are irrelevant to us?
That too, and also accents are like different ways of just saying sounds that are relevant.
Yeah, but if I want to learn someone else's accent,
yes, very hard unless you're under 7 years old. You might never quite get the accent, but up to seven, a child can will get that accent. But the amazing thing is that they learn to ignore those sounds. And then with deaf children, they babble universal babbling, but then it gets less, and they never reach the age of what you called a culturally bound citizens. Now, there's a new research that showed that children who are exposed to sign language and are deaf start to babble with their hands. So for me, that has been a thing. I say that hearing stimulates oral language. Deafness stimulates sign language. And there are two different paradigms.
Okay. So, and we have the ability to separate between the two paradigms and understand where the difficulty is?
It's very hard for us to separate it because...
So a professional would struggle to know where the challenge is actually sitting.
That is why there is no reading program, because professionals, hearing professionals are hearing, and to be deaf is so complicated that it doesn't resonate with them. It is a, it's a different sign language, which is silent, which is visual, where you have to see the signer. Is different to oral language, which is invisible. You know, the one is so they're different. So that is why there is no
It's amazing, by the way, the listeners can't see, but how much sign language you're using as you're talking and indicating.
Yeah.
So it becomes a language.
I'm not such a hot sign languager, but you can see the difference. So if I say, and I'm showing you I don't know,
okay.
I'm just flicking my fingers back and puffing out a cheek. It's got no sound, it's got no I, it's got no don't, it's got no.
So how does the program work that you're writing and you're writing a book on, if it's impossible to, or not impossible, but
yes.
It wasn't available till now?
I can write the book because I taught and researched at the same time. I'm not a speech therapist, I'm a teacher who specialized in deaf education and then from that specialized in speech. So that's why I've got my doctorate in, my PhD is in speech pathology.
Okay.
So the whole thing is that hearing people see writing and then they say, why can't that? They can read it, they can see it. They don't understand that reading is an auditory experience. And that is why no reading system for hearing children is going to work for deaf children. So for me...
You're going to have to repeat that. Reading, is it
auditory experience.
No,
it's not a
I
visual
heard,
experience.
But I think it's an extremely important
yes,
concept,
it,
what
and
you're
it's
saying.
It's very difficult to grasp that if you... Let's say you're teaching the child cat, and you show a cat, which is a... Well, I'm doing the finger spelling,
right.
Which is a half moon. Now, to the hearing child, the teacher will say, this letter, listen to me, says k. But for the deaf child, the sound says nothing.
Okay.
So the word cat, it's nothing. You can't see the k. You can't see the t. So you have to infuse that sound. So, you know, there are two parts of reading, decoding and comprehension. So I'm just talking about decoding. That's fusing the letter. This shape says this. This shape of a funny crook with a cross says f.
So how do you show that to them?
You can't really show it to them, but you can give them a reality in terms of articulation. You teach them to say the sound. And the more they say the sound, funnily enough, the better they can hear the sound, because by saying it, it's very hard to explain, but by saying it, you give yourself a sensory reality that can somehow connect with a slight trace of hearing they have, because all children, deaf children, they have what you call residual hearing, a little bit of hearing, even the worst. The only child I ever knew didn't have an inner ear was from thalidomide.
Okay.
So a lot of my work goes with teaching the children to articulate, but how? Not just putting their tongues, they've got to move, they've got to rub their hands, they've got to bang, they've got to do something to internalize the sound so that they are hearing it silently.
Right. So Charlene, it seems that when we refer to people as deaf or not deaf, it's quite ignorant as... Zelda saying that it's actually quite a spectrum, that even the kids that, or adults or anybody who doesn't hear does have some level of hearing.
Some level of hearing. And we classify different levels of hearing loss. We say mild, moderate, severe, and profound. And deaf children would be in the profound category with very little hearing.
Okay, so they'll have a very minimal hearing. Because we need to move on in time, and you know, this is actually quite fascinating, because you know, while, as you were speaking, I just have to say, Zelda, what's crossing my mind is that potentially, if somebody wants to learn an accent in a new country, or somebody, you know, us immigrants, we want to learn the language of the local language, then by reading it and articulating it from a book more and more will allow us to start hearing it and therefore respond to it and to understand the language better, if the systems are connected.
I'm not sure about
that. Why not?
Because we learn through hearing.
Yes, but can we not teach ourselves to learn through
you
reading?
You can't hear. You can't hear the letter.
But if you could teach someone who doesn't hear
to articulate
the letter,
clearly,
yes, then you should be able to teach someone to ignore their hearing and learn it and then be
maybe
more sensitive to it.
Maybe. It could be.
Yeah. One of the things I grew up with as a child is our mom's parents, grandparents always yelled at us that earphones are going to destroy our hearing. And it's so loud. I'm talking about the days when we still had strings to them and not even talking about the rest. And it was always like, your earphones are too loud. It's going to destroy your hearing. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why does it destroy our hearing?
Why it does, I don't know, but it does. Noise over the 85 decibels. We measure sound in decibels.
Right.
And it's a logarithmic scale. But 85 decibels and above is dangerous. There is a scale about how many minutes or hours is safe listening over 85 decibels. And that can, over 85 decibels, can cause temporary hearing loss, tinnitus, and hopefully a recovery. But if it goes on for too long, then permanent hearing loss will occur. Noise affects people in many different ways. But
so how do we know? How do we know if our earphones are too loud?
How do you know if your earphones are too loud? If you can't hear somebody speaking.
Okay.
If you're at a wedding, for example, not with earphones, but if you're at a table and you can't hear the person next to you speaking, it's too loud. So okay. There is a scale. I brought the scale with. I can.
By the way, I don't know if you know, in about 15 years ago, even a bit more, around 15 years ago, in Israel they passed a law that every hall has to have a 85 decibel measurement, and if the music is louder than that, it will drop the electricity. So you have to plug in your sound system into a certain plug, and if you go, it will get one warning, second warning, third warning, it will just cut out the music.
I wish they kept to that. I have walked past halls a block away, and you could hear them.
No, so they pretty much keep to that unless they're willing to pay the 10,000 shekel fine. Sometimes people say, oh, it's 50,000, over 50,000 rand, we'll pay it, fine. But it does cost you over 50 grand when you don't do that.
I'm so very happy to hear that.
But as I said, some people will choose, okay, I'll pay that 50 grand. But it is, and maybe something to consider, you know, by us and our community regarding awareness, at least, not even rules, but just awareness around that concept. But yeah, go ahead. So how do I identify with my earphones?
With your earphones, if you can't hear somebody.
Just can't hear someone talking to me.
And sometimes it causes pain. But I can tell you about other things, because earphones can be, I don't think there's one kind of earphone.
No, definitely not.
The advice that we give to kids with their phones is just turn left, turn the volume down. Our kids have become power junkies, sound junkies, because there's sound all around us. You go into a supermarket, you go into a shopping center, there is noise. So if you want to hear more or less, a dog barking is more or less 75 decibels, but they're different dog barks. A bus and a lawnmower is about 85 decibels. So ideally, if you are mowing the lawn, you should wear noise plugs.
Okay.
Headphones, generally speaking, about 105 decibels. So turn the volume down. A snowmobile doesn't count here. Rock concerts. They say here,
about 130 decibels. Firecrackers, 130 decibels, but I wouldn't be surprised if in certain cases it's more than that. And a jet taking off, you're next to a jet taking off, there is immediate damage. There can be immediate damage. So
how many decibels would that be?
That's 160.
And that's, okay, so at those numbers you already have immediate damage.
Immediate damage, yeah.
Okay. And the recovery for that, is does that include an intervention or just giving it time and it will repair?
No, it will not repair. If it's permanent noise, nerve deafness, it will not repair,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Okay, so then that leads me to a question regarding that, and I don't know if any of you would want to take that. We often see people losing hearing at an older age. Is that a normal deterioration of our hearing, or is that actually over the years so many damages that occurred that eventually will decrease our hearing, which means it's potentially something we can avoid?
Over 65, hearing occurs in 1 to 3 people. Now, in order to determine what the cause is, you have to know their case history. Did they work with a jackhammer or with a secretary in a quiet environment? So you have to know the history, what they were exposed to, gunshots, soldiers in the army, unfortunately, until a certain time, they weren't mandated to wear earplugs. So many soldiers, unfortunately, older soldiers, it is, even if one hasn't had serious noise exposure, we don't know I wouldn't know how many hours I've spent in a shopping center. And I try to do it as little as possible, but in a shopping center, if I know that I was taking a group of teenagers, grandchildren to a shopping center, I might
You're
consider
brave.
Wearing earplugs. But it's one of the, I'm thinking of the word penalties, one of the benefits of old age, that one does lose one's hearing, one in three people.
And that we need support for. I'm going back to children for a minute, and I'll ask you, because you specifically are working with more of the deaf kids, can we also teach, and when we have a child who is not in loss of hearing, but doesn't have the sensitivity to pick up tone of voice, to pick up subtleties, to pick up concepts within the auditory processing and information, can we train a child or an adult to be more aware of these meanings behind these subtleties that potentially they've blocked out of their awareness?
I don't think that's technology. If anything was going to train them, I think it would be something like speech and drama.
No, definitely not technology. I'm not asking about technology. I'm saying, can we do that? Like, can we teach someone not only to learn the sounds, but someone who does have a proper hearing, but is tone deaf, can we teach them that?
I don't think this is the what I'm talking about. That is a different psychological dimension that you have to reach in different ways.
So you can't,
because hearing is perfect.
Okay.
And that's not the problem. The problem is something else. It's the processing of the neural message.
Right. Although in the hearing, you said that eventually we learn how to ignore sounds that are irrelevant to us.
In babbling, that goes away. That goes away, yes.
Okay.
But even with hearing children,
okay,
with normal hearing, they can have auditory processing problems. So auditory processing problems could impact memory, what one hears, how they process sounds, how they interact, those
supra-segmental
features. Mm. Like, for example, some kids with auditory processing will not hear the difference between these two sentences, for example. Not necessarily these two, but for an example, I learned the word this morning that they called homonyms.
Okay.
You mean ice cream? Or you mean ice cream, you hear the difference. So a child with auditory processing problems might not hear that. They might not be able to hear the difference between the slight temporal difference between the words.
Okay, which affects in every area. It could affect us, so in knowing what the other person is feeling, if they're agitated, if it's the right time to speak to them, etc. Because that tone of voice is not only the pronunciation, it comes in many different aspects. But is that something we can teach?
Absolutely. There's a whole, when I was at university 10,000 years ago, auditory processing.
Plus minus.
Yeah, plus minus. Auditory processing was not as developed as it is today. Now there's a new, there are new programs with auditory processing targeting different auditory processing skills, and they, the testing is able to identify which parts of the brain are involved.
Okay, so let's take a short break, and when we come back, we will go deeper into the auditory processing and available things we have around that.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, and I'm here in a very important discussion. I'm here with Charlene Britt, who is an audiologist, and Dr. Zelda Isaacson, who is a speech and language specialist and works with education for deaf children. Considering we just spoke before the break about auditory processing and the different ways that we treat it differently. Before we go deeper into different programs that we have, Dr. Zelda, I want to ask you, your book and your program, does that target and help kids with auditory processing challenges as well?
I think so. Like 2,000 years ago when I learned about deaf education.
You see, that's much younger.
I know, yeah. I know. We used to categorize auditory processing as central deafness. I don't know if you also used that phrase. Central deafness.
Okay.
So
okay.
I believe I've recommended in, I have actually taught a hearing child who had auditory processing problems. And I didn't, his mother asked me to help him, and I didn't quite know what to do, so I only knew how to teach deaf children. So I taught him to read my way, and he found it very hard to grasp the sounds and the combination of sounds. So okay. I think that articulation, as I do it, is useful for
it
hearing children, yes.
Okay. And, Shannon, you spoke before the break about the shift in how we treat
auditory processing.
I don't know what happened. I guess it's my auditory processing. Something went wrong there. What do we do different today? What are the options that are available?
Well, auditory processing is now a field that is being developed. One of the greatest doyens of auditory processing was Professor Jack Katz, who unfortunately recently left this world, but he left a big legacy. So one of his programs deals with categorizing and defining different types of auditory processing. So I'll give you some technical names. The one he categorizes auditory processing into the ability to decode. That is the ability to accurately process speech, especially at the phonemic or the sound level. So if a person has problems with decoding, they might not develop clear speech, they might not understand what is being said, they might have a problem with receiving language, receptive language, oral reading, word accuracy, spelling, delayed responses, and word finding. So there's a program in his Buffalo model to deal with all those things. Then there's another category which he defines as tolerance fading memory, which is the ability to understand speech and noise, which is a big bugbear for people with a hearing problem, especially with the elderly, or people with hearing problems, or even people with normal hearing with auditory processing problems. And that could affect auditory memory, the ability to hear what is being said, to be able to follow a conversation, to revert back to a previous thing that was mentioned, and similar kind of problems. Then the next category, which he defines, is integration, how we can combine what we hear with information from other modalities like vision, smell, taste, etc. and that's called integration. It's very often associated with dyslexia. Mm-hmm. So dyslexia or severe reading problems. And then there's organization, sequencing and integration. So there we will see kids who have reversals, sound or letters. Organization, a person often who is disorganized might have aspects of this problem. If they often lose things, so I think many old people can identify with that. And if they're messy, if they don't know how to organize themselves. You see, some kids, I've seen children of 2 and 3 years old who are able to categorize their toys and pack them away. Packing away toys is actually a wonderful thing for mothers to teach their children, for children to learn from their mothers.
And so many aspects. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So it's quite a few points that are very interesting about what you're saying, and even the overlap that we will see normally if we would work at the organization side of things from the written side and the letters and et cetera, we would start by an OT, and then if we would do it on the language level, we would do it with a speech therapist, and almost sounds like they're doing the same work from different angles and can support each other very well. What I'm wondering is, considering that we refer to the reading as an auditory process as well, if someone has a challenge with their reading processing, like they'll read the words and just read them but not really process them, or read a book 50 times because the memory is not kicking in or it's not interpreting well, and obviously we would say that they probably do have also a challenge in their auditory when they're spoken to, I'm wondering if it would be the same level of challenge, or could there be a gap that in one method it's easier and they're more advanced, and in one method less advanced? So a child that will be more advanced in their categorizing and understanding and processing when reading, but less when listening, or vice versa?
That is a very interesting question. Okay. I'm not sure that I can answer it.
Okay, fair enough.
Can you, Zelda?
I think that is the difference process. So you're talking about decoding, which is auditory processing. Then there's comprehension.
Right.
So this is comprehension.
Okay. But yet the comprehension,
yes,
would be also could be with sound, and it could be with written.
It is. I see. So this would be, comprehension with reading, comprehension with the written word, you could say. So they can comprehend, or as you say, they are lax in their comprehension, even with speaking, but they can't fuse the written sound and put it together as syntax.
Right. So, because my real question would be, if it was correlated, then we could really choose which side would be easier for us to work on, and then hopefully improve in both areas. But if they're separate, that there could be gaps on different levels in the two sides of it, we'll have to work separately.
Now, I think they really are a gestalt of a whole fusion of something. I mean, because syntax is not grammar. And syntax, which is the understanding of language, is not words. Shall I tell you after the break what syntax is?
Okay, we can. I see you're very aware of the surrounding. That's okay. But maybe in one sentence now, and then we'll see after the break, because we're running out of time.
So syntax is something that is pre-programmed in the normal brain. It is pre-programmed like a weaver bird that builds its nest. It's there.
Pre-programmed because of our DNA
birth,
and not because of information we've picked up and
it's pre-programmed there.
Right.
And it's like if I was to say that the words are like beads all scattered. Syntax is the invisible thread that strings the words together to make meaning.
Exactly. So basically, if you've ever sat in a very boring lecture and you looked at the never, right? And specifically when it comes to money and economy and whatever, and you look at the board that the teacher's teaching and you say, okay, I know this word and I know this word and I know this word and this word, but together I have no clue what's flying here.
Exactly.
That's what we're talking about. Yes, and that's yeah. where we'll have a child reading everything and we get so frustrated.
I don't think I understood your question. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where we'll go. And we won't understand. Well, you know all these words, just read it. But really, the thread is not there, and that's where the challenge is. Okay, we're not going to have enough time to speak about how to deal with that, but it's important that we have that concept, and we can go there.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and really heading towards the end of today's discussion. I just have to ask quickly, your take on this one. I come from a country where I was trained. My training happened overseas. And one of the things that was fascinating that I don't see here necessarily is in Israel, you cannot get a evaluation of ADD or ADHD or autism specifically without an eye test or a hearing test, because there's no point of assessing speech and language development and autism spectrum if the child doesn't hear or doesn't see properly. What is your take on that generally? And I'll just add to that, and how would someone identify if their child is struggling with hearing?
How would you identify whether there are subjective tests and there are objective tests? So the subjective tests are when you present sound to children at different levels and they have to respond.
I'm asking more before you, when you say, okay, I need to take my child for a specialist, what are you seeing? Obviously, not the level of that the professional would do, but a parent identifying that it should be checked.
So you're identifying, you want to identify if the child is not speaking properly because they're hearing.
Right.
Or they're not hearing. So if they point to things, if they don't respond to any sound whatsoever, if they make no attempt to speak.
That's older kids already?
These are children should, by a year, they should be starting to say words. About 2 years old.
If your 10-year-old starts losing hearing, how would you pick that up?
They would have formal tests. If the child can respond, then you have the objective testing, the subjective test, where you present sounds at different intensity levels, and you determine whether it's a temporary, permanent, a sensory neural loss or a conductive loss, if there's any problems along the auditory pathway that aren't nerve related. And then you get objective tests. You get OAEs, which will test the inner ear function. And then if a child can't respond to that, then we have ABRs, automated testing.
Okay. And just in one sentence, both of you, your take on the connection between spectrum or, and by the way, I'm not sure about ADD or ADHD that you can't get it overseas without a hearing, but for sure about the spectrum. What is your take on the connection?
Well, recently it's been shown that there is a connection between auditory processing, not necessarily related to hearing loss, in autism and with children with ADHD.
Okay. Dr. Zelda?
I don't really see in my case a connection, because deafness is such a problem by itself.
Right, so you're more focused on that area.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Erev Pesach, having you come to studio is quite an impressive thing. I'm sure there's so much to do. So I really, really want to thank you, Dr. Zelda Isaacson. Thank you so much for being with us today, speech and language and speech therapist, and then audiologist Charlene Brett. Thank you so much for being with us today as well. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you, Senna, for putting these interviews in place. And thank you to our listeners here week after week, different discussions. Enjoy your next week. Enjoy your Pesach. Have a meaningful, beautiful Pesach, elevated times, and stay tuned for other great shows. And we will be back after Pesach with our next show.